Okay, think back with me for a second. What are your earliest memories of using a computer? Maybe that old dial-up sound or a big clunky monitor. I remember thinking it was magic, just, looking up movie times online back in the day. Fast forward to now. Wow, we're sharing videos, working on the same document from different countries, even attending events virtually. It's a completely different world, isn't it? The way our relationship with computers and information has changed, it's kind of mind-blowing. And this evolution, it's had a huge impact, especially in education. So today we're doing a deep dive into exactly that, the journey of computer-mediated communication and what it means for, well, how we learn and teach now. We're looking at a really interesting article for this one. It's called On Computer-Mediated Communication in Schools by Gary Ackerman. It was posted on hackscience.education back in January 2024, and it maps out this whole path from early PCs to, well, today's interactive digital world. Our mission really is to unpack that journey, understand the big shifts, and what it means for preparing young people today. Okay, let's get into it. So Gary Ackerman, the author, he actually started teaching way back in 1988, and his tech, an Apple Ike.
Wow, an Apple Ike. Yeah, that really dates it, doesn't it?
Right. And back then, what were computers for in school? Primarily individual work. Ackerman talks about using his first computer mainly for, creating stuff like word processor files, think reports, and manipulating info, like in spreadsheets or making basic graphs.
Standard stuff for the time.
Exactly. And then CD drives came along, which was a step up. You could consume, maybe create slightly fancier things like multimedia stuff.
But it was very much about you and your machine, right? Your output, what you could get off a disk. Pretty isolated, really.
Yeah, absolutely. If you wanted to share something, you probably just print it out.
What's fascinating looking back is how computers started as these powerful, but fundamentally personal, almost solitary tools.
Yeah.
They boosted individual productivity, sure, and let you manage data or consume things from local sources like that floppy disk or CD. The information flow was pretty limited, from the disk or your keyboard to the screen or printer. That was basically it.
It was revolutionary, no doubt, but yeah, very contained, like you said, solitary.
Definitely. A foundational step, but limited to, the classroom or maybe the home office.
But that solitary phase, it was really just the beginning, wasn't it? The big change started happening mid-90s.
Right, that's when things get really interesting. The internet arrives.
Yeah. Ackerman mentions that in the mid-90s, he started getting his computers connected. He'd played around with bulletin board systems, BBSs back in 85, apparently.
Oh yeah, the precursors. Text-based communities.
Exactly. But the internet was his first real taste of this massive networked information source. And by the late 90s, he describes computer labs just full of internet-connected machines. Students, teachers, everyone was just constantly consuming information from the internet. They were creating things too, websites and such, but.
But not really sharing it widely online yet, right?
Yeah.
Or interacting around it much.
Precisely. It was still mostly about information retrieval, pulling stuff down, and then maybe creating things internally. Still kind of a one-way street in a sense.
And if you connect that to the bigger picture, I mean, that was the pivot point. Moving from isolated processing to accessing this gigantic shared public library of information, the scale just exploded. Compared to a floppy disk or even a decent library, it was, well, almost infinite.
Like going from your personal bookshelf to the Library of Alexandria overnight.
Exactly. And it wasn't just more information, it was that potentially any information from anywhere was reachable. The focus was still mainly on consuming, yeah, but the sheer volume and accessibility, it completely changed the game for learning, challenged everything we thought about finding information.
That's a great way to put it. But even with all that information, something was still missing, right? What was the next leap?
Well, it was moving beyond just finding information to actually, doing something with it together, interacting around it.
Right. And that really took off around the turn of the century. Ackerman talks about how those old bulletin boards evolved. They became discussion forums, blogs, wikis,
Yeah.
all these Web 2.0 tools.
Web 2.0, yeah. The key there was user-generated content.
Exactly. These platforms weren't just for reading anymore. They were built for users to create, to publish, to connect. They made interacting over the internet central, not just consuming.
It flipped the model.
And then, of course, social media platforms arrived and just, well, they transformed everything again. How we interact personally, professionally, all of it.
And this raises a really important point, especially for education. What did this shift mean? It meant that line between consuming information and creating it just got incredibly blurry, People weren't just reading articles anymore. They were sharing them, commenting, arguing about them, adding their own perspectives.
It stopped being a one-way street.
Or even just two-way. It became this constant multi-directional conversation. Suddenly, everyone potentially had a voice, a platform. We weren't just accessing knowledge, we were starting to build it together. Online.
And you see that reflected directly in schools today, just like the article points out. Students are discussing work online, they're collaborating on documents, sharing edits instantly, they're part of online communities, sometimes local, sometimes global.
Yeah, it's completely woven into the fabric of learning now.
And the article nails this point. Today, in the, you know, second decade plus of the 21st century, we probably use our computers as much to interact as we do to consume or create information.
That balance, that dual nature is critical. It's not just an information machine anymore. It's a connection machine, too.
Okay, so we've seen this explosion in digital interaction. What does the research say about why it works so well and why it spreads so fast?
Well, the article points to a pretty clear consensus in the research findings. First off, it's effective for communication in pairs, dyads, and also in small groups. Great for collaboration.
Okay.
And it's really flexible. It works for many-to-one situations, like Q&A sessions or polls, and also one-to-many, like a teacher sending out an announcement or lecture notes.
Right. That makes sense. Versatile.
And beyond that, it seems to encourage more participation in what they call ad hoc groups.
Ad hoc, like temporary groups.
Exactly. Groups that form quickly for a specific task and then dissolve. Think quick project teams. But it also boosts engagement in long-term communities, like ongoing class forums or clubs.
That flexibility is huge for learning, isn't it? Being able to jump into quick collabs or stick with a long-term discussion, much harder to do offline.
Definitely. And the article highlights two big underlying factors that really drove this rapid expansion. Things we almost take for granted now.
Okay, what are they?
First, the near zero marginal cost.
Meaning,
once you have internet access, sending one more message, joining one more video call, posting one more comment, it costs practically nothing extra.
Ah, right. Unlike, say, making lots of phone calls back in the day or sending letters.
Precisely. It removed this huge economic barrier. Interaction became almost effortless, financially speaking. It just democratized the ability to connect constantly.
Okay, that's a big one. What's the second factor?
The second is the wide availability of multimedia functions. This just opened up way more ways to communicate. We now create digital info with our voices, with pictures, with videos we capture. And those files instantly become part of the conversation.
Yeah, think about students explaining something.
Right. A student can record a quick audio explanation or share a short video clip showing their work just as easily as typing out text. This richness, this ability to use different modes, audio, video, images, text, makes the interaction more engaging, more nuanced, often just, better than text alone.
That resonates so much with how we all communicate daily now, doesn't it? Sending a voice note, sharing a picture, a GIF to make a point. It feels completely natural.
Exactly. Yeah. So those two things, the near zero cost and the rich multimedia options, they've fundamentally reshaped how we connect and collaborate, made digital interaction feel almost instinctive.
So we've traced this amazing path from these isolated machines to these global multimedia conversation platforms. The big question then becomes, what does this completely changed landscape mean for schools, for the institutions that are supposed to prepare kids for this world?
Well, the reality is, youngsters starting school today, they've spent their entire lives learning, doing things, interacting within this digital information and connection ecosystem, as the article puts it. This isn't new to them. It's their normal. It's the environment they grew up in.
It's their natal habitat, basically.
Pretty much. And that puts a clear charge on schools. They have to prepare these young people to participate fully, critically, and effectively in this ecosystem.
Okay, so how do they do that?
Well, the good news is this ecosystem isn't just a challenge. It actually offers tons of functions that are incredibly useful for education.
Right.
But, and this is the core takeaway from the article for schools, the planning, the technology strategy, it must support both sides of this ecosystem.
Both sides, you mean?
The information side, accessing it, creating it, managing it, and the interaction side, collaborating, discussing, connecting. It's not an either situation. You need to leverage both. They're intertwined and equally vital for learning today. You can't really separate them anymore.
That makes so much sense. It's not just about giving kids access to information. It's about helping them navigate the conversations around that information, too.
Exactly. That dual nature is key. Mm-hmm. And for anyone listening, whether you're an educator, a parent, anyone involved with young people, understanding that balance is crucial. Mm. It's about seeing the whole picture, the integrated potential. These tools aren't just for delivering facts, they're for building connections, sparking discussions, and developing those collaborative skills everyone needs now.
It's been quite a journey we've mapped out today, hasn't it? From that solitary, apolyic Gary Ackerman started with in 88 to this buzzing, interconnected world where creating content and having conversations about it are just completely blended together.
It's incredible, really. And I think what's often still missed, even now, is that while we first got excited about computers for delivering information efficiently, the truly revolutionary part, the real power, as Ackerman's experience shows, wasn't just the information, it was the way technology enabled this dynamic, almost free, and incredibly rich human interaction.
Yeah.
That shift from a personal tool to a global conversation platform, that's the real story here.
So maybe a final thought for everyone listening to take away. Given that young people today have literally always lived inside this information and interaction ecosystem, how can you, maybe in your own life, your work, your family, how can you better leverage both sides of that digital coin, both the information tools and the interaction tools to help foster deeper learning or better connections or maybe just more engagement?
What new possibilities open up when you consciously think about balancing both information and interaction in how you use these tools every day?
Something to think about as we all keep navigating this ever-evolving digital world.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to get stronger just around the corner, so you can give everything you've got. Whether you want to crush a few reps before class with our expanded strength equipment or sweat it out on your way home from work, with over 2,800 locations, there's a Planet Fitness close to you, and most are open 24 hours. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends January 30th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.